Blog Talk Radio.
See, Muhammad give you knowledge that you can't say pop it, he my father already here. Let alone coming, let every ear hear. He be blowing like a trumpet. I use my music like a gun and I'ma dump it. Hey bro, I do this for my God and all he come. Yes sir, you best believe it, make no assumptions. You trick or treat on Halloween, it ain't about pumpkins. You feed your mind the wrong thing and it be nonsense. He call you dead cause you kill your own conscience. The innocence and right and wrong in one's conduct. Rebel against Allah, who knows where you wind up. And for you devils, my God says your time's up. That food from my father, that heavenly water. Brother, stop and ignoring it, start to be smart. He took murderers and made a man and true father. Just imagine what he can do. What if you rob? He can show you how to eat to live if you bother. Show you how to keep bringing fear with no problem. So many deviating be laying under the needle. The son of man, he's the son of the sequel. A result, a consequence, a interference, and he won't stop until we equal in a fear.
All of my people, all of my people just wanna be equal, wanna be equal.
Strong taste. Cause when you a man, you belong in your own place. Message of a lie, teach you how to hold your own weight. One shot, one home, sister, one grace. One God, one stone, brother, one faith. Every knee shall bow, every knee shall kneel. Every beast in the wild, everyone shall heal. Standing black and proud, in peace we'll live. And any praise to God for the life we're given. You got power, all you gotta be is will. You got space, all you gotta be is filled. And if you got knowledge, then you gotta feed the children. We got some in college, but a lot of my people killed. I'm a physical man, and all I gotta be is real. Raise me up, so I can see the fires on the ceiling.
All of my people, all of my people just wanna be equal, wanna be equal. I'm coming to get ya,
from the top down. Thank you for tending in possession of a Glock 9. And me, I use my words like bullets, never stop fine. I mean, I serve God to the fullest, no stop sign. Cause he would love to see you smile and see you stop crying. But them crackers don't want you up, they want you locked down. Yeah, man, they love to see you lost, sheep not down. And they know that I'm a fighter, you'll never see me knocked down. I'm a king of the king, and you'll never see me not crowned.
And I'll never forget ya.
Truth is, man, they rather see you dead, a shot down. But not while I'm here, maybe not while I'm round. I know what's up, brother, so I say salam now. They keep us stressed out, they wanna dumb down. They pick the best out, they let some drown. And they can't stand my sight, no, they can't stand my sound. This be that good fight, and I'ma stand my ground. Stand my ground.
All of my people, all of my people just wanna be equal, wanna be equal. I'm coming to get ya, coming to get ya.
Of Allah, the beneficent, the merciful.
I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is his messenger, and I bear witness that the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, leader, teacher, and guide in our midst, and it is my distinct honor to greet all of you in our greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum.
And it is also, thank you, gentlemen. And it is also my distinct honor, privilege, and pleasure to bring to you a brother who is one of the brightest stars in our nation and who has dedicated more than 40 years of his life to uplifting our people with the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he has been a great assistant to the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan. I give you our dear brother and our host, none other than Student Minister James Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam. And as usual, I thank you so much for your gracious words, and I hope by Allah's grace to one day equal up to or even approximate the wonderful accolades that you lay on me every time you introduce me, dear sister. I am humbled by your introduction. For those of you who may not know, what you were listening to in our introductory music was the CD of our brother Tracy X hailing from Tampa, Florida, entitled Coming to Get You. And we always want to promote our young brothers who are in the rap industry, and sisters, of course, but with positive rap, positive hip-hop. So you'll be hearing about him very soon. And when you do, flock to wherever his CD is being distributed and make sure you get a copy. Always, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, we thank Almighty God Allah for making his appearance known to us in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, the great Mahdi, and raising up from our midst his messenger, Messiah, the exalted Christ, the one whom the world has been awaiting and expecting for the past 2,000 years, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. Alive and well and in power and on his way back. We thank him for raising up from our midst his number one student and disciple, that one of whom the scripture refers to as the who has, is, and will guide us into all truth. He is our deliverer. He is savior, warner, reminder. Yes, he's all of that, and I refer to him as my personal redeemer. The man of whom I speak is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. In their names, beloved family, those of you in our listening telephone audience, as well as those of you who are online, we're very honored and happy to greet you all once again with another edition of our show, Put on the New Man, in the greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
We're very, very, very blessed this evening to have as our esteemed guest and panelist a brother whom I've known probably for, I don't know how far we go back, Brother Victor, but it's been a few years. And then knowing you, I'm blessed to know something of you, your character, and also your work. But I'll stick to the your bio. Brother Victor Muhammad. Brother Victor was born in, is it Ida Bina, Mississippi? He received both Bachelor's of Science and Master's of Science degrees at Alcorn State University in Norman, Mississippi. He's worked toward his Ph.D. at Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio. The field is animal science and nutrition. In 1991, he entered the field of biomedical research. As a practicing scientist since 1982 in agricultural research, he has worked as a fishery scientist in the District of Columbia government, AIDS researcher in the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, and D.C. area clinic, glaucoma researcher at St. Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, Baltimore, Maryland. He became a student of Islam in 1998 after hearing the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on videotape while working toward his PhD. He then began ministerial classes in 1991. As a minister, he served as Assistant Minister of Mosque No. 4, Washington, D.C., 1994. He served as Minister of Mosque No. 57 in Norfolk, Virginia. He established a mosque in Alexandria, Virginia, which has become known as the only Nation of Islam mosque in Northern Virginia outside of Richmond in 1995. As head of the Nation of Islam Mosque, Minister Muhammad's responsibilities included inspiring and motivating the people to serve as beacons for the rest of the community. He is an accomplished author, authoring the book Moments in the Mind of a Minister in 1988. And, of course, there's much, much more, but I want to say on a personal note, he is my brother. He is my friend. He inspires me. And of recent, he has supervised my accomplishment in completing the requirements to become a certified HIV/AIDS counselor and tester, for which I am grateful, thankful to Allah for him. Grateful and very much thankful to Allah for him and what he has done for me. So having said that, I'd like to introduce to some and present to some our beloved brother and student minister and scientist, our brother Victor Muhammad. Brother Victor, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Brother James, and dear sister Aziza, I believe. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for your introduction, Sister Aziza, and thank you, Brother James, for your introduction and the information you laid out about me. A couple of things. I actually first heard the Honorable Louis Farrakhan in 1988 at Ohio State on a videotape, and but everything else, for the most part, that you said is accurate. But one of the things that, well, first let me start this off properly. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. For those of you who are on this radio broadcast who do not understand what I just said, Allah is an Arabic word that means God. And for the last 457 years in America, we have been led to think that we serve different gods and that there is more than one God. But there isn't. And we must stop allowing people to trip us up and start artificial arguments and debates with one another over words. If you were in a country that spoke Arabic, you would say Allah. If you're in a country that speaks English, you say God. That is pretty much the only difference. But we're not here this evening to talk about God, but in a way we are. We want to address a very serious scourge in our community, in our country, and in the world, and that is the subject of HIV and AIDS. In the Bible, well, in the church, there is a song that is sung, and it goes like this. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. Why would I quote that to you on a subject of HIV and AIDS? The reason is this. That song is talking about me. That's why. Because those words describe the individual who I was when God pulled me out of the world. And in 1989, I was working as an environmental analyst with the United States Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. I was writing environmental impact statements and environmental assessments for Congress and the first President Bush. I wanted to go back to law school to do scientific and environmental law. I wanted to do one oil spill case. I wanted to collect my 10% or 30%, probably would have been around $33 million, and I was going to leave America and go down to South America with my money and live out the rest of my life. I was 24 years old then, and that was my plan. But God apparently had another plan, because every time I tried to get into law school or deal with law, that door would be closed on me. And for some reason, the only job I could get was at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, right outside Washington, D.C. Now, I had no desire in biomedical research. Biomedical research means the research of diseases that affect humans and animals. And I had absolutely no desire for that. I wanted to go to law school, make me some quick money, and then roll out. But every door that I tried to go through was blocked. And finally, in December of 1991, it was made clear to me that I would either accept a job at NIH or I would go hungry and starve to death. And I mean that literally. So naturally, I didn't want to starve, so I submitted and I accepted the job at NIH. I had no idea what the job was. All I knew was they were looking for a researcher with an animal background. Okay, so I went to the job. When I arrived at the job the first day, I learned that my job was to take the HIV virus. I want everyone to listen to me, and I want you to carefully listen. My job was to take the virus, HIV, and take mouse, rat, rabbit embryos, or fertilized eggs, put them under a microscope, take a needle with the virus in it, and inject the virus into the embryos of the mice, the rats, and the rabbits. Then get a female rabbit, mouse, or rat who we have tricked into thinking that she's pregnant. I won't go into all of that because it's kind of irrelevant to the point. But we would trick her into thinking that she's pregnant, and her body would start carrying out the same functions that a pregnant mouse or animal would do. So what I would do is surgically open up this female. I would remove her ovaries. I'd take a needle and puncture a little hole in her ovaries, and I would inject the eggs or the embryos that I injected the virus into her ovaries, and I would use a straw and blow them down into her uterus, the fallopian tubes. I'd sew her back up and put her in the cage, and then in 19 days she would give birth to the mice or the rats or the rabbits into whom I had injected the AIDS virus. Now, why did we do that? We did that because we wanted to study HIV in a living system without having to use human subjects. So the next best thing to do was to get the smallest mammals, which is the mouse, and give the mouse HIV or AIDS. So the mice would suffer from edema. The mice would suffer from cataracts. It would suffer from renal failure. and pneumonia and all the other ailments that a person with AIDS has. So this got me into HIV and got me to studying AIDS. Then in 1991, Minister Farrakhan sent Dr. Abdul Aleem Muhammad, Sister Barbara Justice, and the Final Call editor, Brother Wali Muhammad, to Kenya, because he had heard about a drug that a black Kenyan doctor was using over there to treat prostitutes in the country of Kenya, in the city of Nairobi. So they went there, and they found that the drug worked. 82% of the time, the drug worked. So out of every 100 people who were given this drug, 82 of them would recover. So Dr. Muhammad brought some of the drug back to the U.S., and he began treating the patients with it, and the patients started to get better. So, you know, his clinic was always filled with people in Washington, D.C. This was in Washington, D.C. So he treated those patients for about a year, and then around December of 1994, I was working then as a cancer researcher at Howard University School of Medicine. And one day, Dr. Muhammad called me at the lab at Howard, and he told me, he said, "Brother, the FDA just confiscated our drugs as they were coming in through customs. And the patients are dying, and they're falling off because I don't have the medicine to treat them." He said, "Can you do anything to help me?" So I had no idea what to do, but I said, "Well, brother, let me get back with you. I'll let you know." So I went and grabbed my immunology book, and I started to read about HIV and the virus and everything. So what happened is that we ended up I was blessed to develop a product that was a liquid version of what the Muhammad had been getting from Kenya to treat the AIDS patients. And I mixed it up and put it in bottles and took it to him, and he started using it in the patients in December 1994. February, March of 1995, two of the patients had serodeconverted, meaning they had gone from being HIV positive to HIV negative. Brother Demetrius Muhammad and a sister named, she's from Baltimore, but they became the first two to go from being HIV positive to HIV negative. Now, there's a lot more to that story, but I don't want to take up the entire time talking about it. I just wanted to give you all somewhat of a background of my history with HIV and AIDS. And from there, you know, I went into the prisons, the jails. I went into the mental institutions throughout the streets of America. I've gone to the Netherlands. I've gone to South Africa two times. I've been in the Virgin Islands, Cape Verde, Africa, Trinidad. I've gone to Panama, the country Panama, a whole host of other places talking about HIV and doing some other things that I won't go into over this telephone, but a lot of things. But that kind of gives you a background of my background so that you will have a better understanding of what it is that I've been fortunate to do. And so I think, Brother James, if it's okay with you, I will let you set the tone on how you want the discussion to go. I just wanted to lay that foundation so that we would all have an idea of who I am and what I've been fortunate to do by God's permission.
Well, thank you, dear brother, and I think that's very, in fact, I know that's very much appropriate that you would introduce yourself to the people, giving some background as to those things that you've engaged in. Of course, lends a great deal of credibility to what you're going to share with us regarding the HIV and AIDS virus. There, of course, are many myths regarding it, and because of our ignorance of the affliction, you know, again, they're myths about it. I'm going to let you get into some of them, dealing first of all with which the origin of it, and you can share with us some of what is being put forth by the quote-unquote society, the medical field, those who are in the top echelons of the medical field, and then, of course, the reality of it from your perspective and from the teachings of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I must make note that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has dealt with this subject of AIDS and the pandemic nature of AIDS, particularly in America, but throughout the world. In the 37th and 38th installments of The Time and What Must Be Done, which I would strongly recommend if those of you in the listening audience, some of you have not been following the minister in those series of lectures, I strongly recommend you do. And tonight we'll be drawing from some of what the minister has shared with us, again, from installments 37 and 38. I'll just say as a talking point that the minister has mentioned to us, again, the pandemic nature of this virus, and he's also talked about the most honorable Elijah Muhammad statements found in the illuminating books, How to Eat to Live, Volume 1 and Volume 2, regarding the biochemical warfare that's being waged on the black community in particular, poor people in general, and it is fueled by, as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan shared with us, an American wicked foreign policy that centers upon the desire, believe it or not, to cull the planet. That word cull means to actually destroy, in large part, whole populations of the planet. They wish to reduce the planet's population by 2 to 3 million, or rather billion, people. It's called culling. And they're doing it through the denurturing of the food. They're doing it through the implementation and implantation of transgenic seeds as well as genetically modified seeds in the food that eventually will kill us off. Also, they're doing it through immunization, inoculations, these so-called inoculations against major diseases, one of which is polio, and then there are others. But in these inoculations is death. So I just want to say that as a talking point, and you can go to the archives of The Time and What Must Be Done, specifically those particular installments, 37 and 38, and edify yourself, research it for yourself. But I'm going to turn it over again to our beloved brother Victor Muhammad. And if you would, brother, what are some of the things that the medical society, those in the higher echelons of that society, what are some of the things that they're saying regarding the origin of this disease?
If you remember, if anyone is old enough to remember, 30 years ago when HIV first hit the scene, a few years after herpes hit the scene in America, one of the earlier claims that was made is that HIV originated from a green monkey somewhere in Africa. Now, that is not true. That is not accurate. And the reason I can say that that is not accurate, because I know. And the only time that you can know something is when you have had proof of it, you personally have seen proof, or you've done it, you know, you've touched it or felt it. Then you can say you know. Anything other than that, anything other than firsthand knowledge, you can only say that you believe, you know, or I think. But when I was at the National Institutes of Health, we actually attempted to infect primates and monkeys with HIV. And monkeys and apes cannot be infected with HIV. You say, well, aren't monkeys and apes the same thing? No, they're not. Monkeys have tails. Apes do not. There are only three, and there are many thousand species of monkey. The three apes are gorilla, chimpanzee, and orangutan. Everything else is a monkey. So you cannot do it. Now, there is a virus very similar to the HIV called the SIV, and that stands for simian, immunodeficiency virus. And simian is a type of monkey, the simian monkey. But that's a virus that's similar to HIV. It is not the same thing. So that is something that was stated that is not true. Now, a lot of people have stated that HIV was made. It's man-made. Well, that's not hard to believe. Because anyone who knows the science of molecular biology, genetic engineering, you can go into a kitchen, and I'm not exaggerating. You can go into a kitchen with regular kitchenware and make a genetically engineered organism if you have the requisite knowledge and training. It is not difficult. In fact, to prove this, one evening when I was working at NIH, there was a young black girl who was in high school, and she wanted to get some actual experience in biomedical research because she wanted to go to med school. And many of the med schools in the 80s started to require people who wanted to become doctors to have some form of research training prior to medical school. So we allowed her to come into our lab. And one afternoon from 1 o'clock to 5 p.m., I taught her how to make a genetically engineered organism in one afternoon. Now, that might sound far-fetched to you, but that's nothing but actual fact. But I just wanted to point out that it's not that difficult to teach someone, and it's not that difficult to do it if you have the knowledge. So here's my point. If you have that kind of knowledge and that kind of skill, then you know that it's not difficult to make something like HIV. People say that it was manufactured. Well, in 1967, if you go to the Library of Congress, the Congressional Library in Washington, D.C., check the congressional record. There was a 1967 Senate subcommittee hearing held in Congress, and the subject of the hearing was germ and biological warfare. Congress wanted to allocate funding to make a biological agent that would circumvent any known cure. 1967 Senate subcommittee hearing on germ and biological warfare. Now, that project was funded. And from the research that I've seen, the work or the research or the R&D was carried out at Fort Detrick, Maryland, right above Baltimore, about 20, 30 miles north of Baltimore, Maryland, on Interstate 95. Shortly thereafter, we began to see the arrival in the 70s of syphilis. And syphilis spread throughout the black community. Then, later on, we started to see a rise in gonorrhea. It spread throughout the black community. Didn't kill anybody, but if you were in college around the early 80s, you started to see symptoms of syphilis or gonorrhea, then all you had to do was go to the infirmary, pull down your pants, get a shot in your rump, pull your pants up, and you were straight, you know. Then around 1982, there was a new thing that came on the scene, that getting a shot didn't help, and that was herpes. And herpes spread throughout America. It spread throughout the black community. But this time it was a virus. It wasn't a bacteria or anything. So you couldn't get a shot for this. So that was a scare for a while. Then after that, around 83, some people say earlier than that, but I don't remember any cases, any actual cases of HIV. Maybe there were some, because when it first hit America, it hit your major cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New York. And then in the southern part of the United States, like Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, we started to see HIV around 1983, 1984. And there was no shot that could take care of that, and people started to die. Now, if you look at the progression of this work, it started with syphilis back in the Tuskegee experiment, and it has worked its way from Tuskegee all the way up to HIV, and people have been dying for the last 30 years from HIV. So there are many theories out there, but having been trained as a scientist and as a Muslim, I cannot say anything for which I do not have proof. If I'm going to speculate, you still have to be careful with your speculation, because when you say something, even if you phrase it in the proper language to let people know that you don't know this to be certain, but this is what you believe, when they repeat it, they're not going to phrase it like that. They're going to speak it as though it's a fact. And that's not something that you want to do. Now, a point that I would like to raise is this. HIV is caused by a virus. It is called the human immunodeficiency virus. The disease that is contracted reportedly as a result of HIV is called AIDS, and that stands for the acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. That's a combination of different things that take place in your body that is called a syndrome or AIDS, and that includes a decrease in T cell count, increase in viral load, things like thrashing the back of your mouth, loss of weight, loss of appetite, renal failure, edema, and a whole host of pneumonia, a whole host of other ailments that take place in the body or can take place. But at the same time, the common cold is caused by a virus. The flu is caused by a virus. Chickenpox, a virus. Shingles, a virus. Herpes, a virus. There are many viruses and there are many diseases from which human and animals suffer that are caused by viruses. So what is it that's so remarkable about HIV that people die from it and there's no cure for it? Well, here's what I have found in my own research of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. the thing that causes HIV to establish itself in our bodies is our immune system, in most cases, is shot. We don't have a comparable immune system because of the foods we eat mostly and our diet and the medications that we take. I have a shock for you. It is not normal for people to take medicine. That is not normal.
Mm-hmm.
That is placing toxin or poison in your body, even though you may correct one problem. But the damage that you do may far outweigh the problem that you corrected. In most cases, medications, when you put them in your body, they begin to destroy what are called soft tissue organs, your liver, your spleen, your kidneys, and things like that. Once those things are destroyed, then you are pretty much done for. You know, even if you get a transplant, the number of immunosuppressant drugs that you have to take just to keep your body from rejecting the organ, you know, for the first 3 years, you might have to take 20 pills a day, body from rejecting the organ in a transplant. So that alone will kill you. So this is why we have to pay very close attention to our diet and the foods that we eat. You know, what is the number one food that destroys our immune system and weakens our body? Pork, swine, meat of the pig. Why does it do that? Because there is a worm that lives in the muscle of that animal. It's called the trichina worm. And that worm is a thermophile, which means that it can withstand very high temperatures, even being cooked. That worm is also a neurophile. Neuro means nerve, file means to like. So it likes nerve tissue. So what happens when we eat the meat of the pig, even when you cook it, you can fry it, you can put it on the grill, wherever you want to put it, it doesn't matter. You're not going to kill that worm by cooking it. It goes inside a little protein cyst. It's a sac. Once it feels the heat, it goes inside that cyst. When you eat it and it gets in your stomach, it comes out of the cyst because it senses that it's okay. So it comes out of the cyst. It bores a hole through your stomach, travels through your stomach, back into your spine. It's inside the cord. Travels up the spinal cord and lodges itself in the brain. If you did not know, the brain and the spinal cord are connected at the base of the neck, right behind the egg on the back of your head. If you feel right under the egg, that's where your brain connects to your spinal cord. Excuse me, that's where the spinal cord connects to the brain. When that worm climbs inside your brain, it begins to eat the tissue of the brain. And when you take an autopsy of a person who has had a stroke, if you examine the brain, generally you'll find that worm lodged into that part of the brain that controls the side of the person's body that the stroke took place. So HIV, when it gets in the body, it's nothing more than having the rhinovirus in your body, which causes the common cold, or having the influenza virus in your body that causes the flu, or the rubella virus, or the chickenpox virus. You know, what is it that this allows your body to fight off this virus? Because we have compromised our immune system by the foods that we eat. So now you can go to the supermarket. And have you ever noticed how sweet oranges are now and how sweet nectarines and plums and peaches are today? How sweet watermelons are? That's because they have been selectively bred to only now concentrate on its sweetness. The the nutrition, the minerals, the vitamins have been removed from the fruit because nobody is interested in the nutritional value. Now, I want you all to take me seriously because what I'm saying to you is 100% fact. They're not concentrating on nutritional value of foods. They're only concentrating on how sweet it is and the appearance of it. So when you go in the supermarket now, have you ever seen fruit and vegetables that pretty? No, you haven't.
Come on, beloved. Come on.
No, you haven't. But have you ever had oranges that are as sweet as the ones today? Watermelons, as sweet, you know. 20 years ago, you could go to the supermarket and get a South Carolina crimson sweet watermelon, the big watermelon with the long stripes on it. But you can't find those anymore. The only thing you can find today in the supermarket are the little watermelons with the green hull, and they've got the orange tag on them. Those have been genetically modified. They don't even plant seeds to grow them. This time of the year, what they do, they go, they clip the vines. And there's a solution that you place the clipping on. It's a type of culture medium. You place the cutting on that, and after a couple of days, just a piece of leaf starts to grow into a full plant. Then after it grows so much, they take it and put it in soil. And that's how you grow your watermelons now. So they don't even have to sell seeds anymore. Because fruits and vegetables are not even grown from seeds anymore. Now, there's a lot that I could tell you in that line, but this isn't the time for it, and really it takes a series of lectures over a long period of time to cover all of this stuff. But I only brought that up to tell you that the fruits and vegetables that you eat, the meat that you eat today, it has no nutritional value. So you look like a human being, but that's not really what we are today because we don't take in the sustenance that would allow us to grow and develop into human beings. So today you have real big people, but they're nothing but big fluffs of air because there's nothing in us now. So we're big. But if you stick a pin in us, we might just deflate like a balloon because we're not made out of anything anymore. Go and look at photographs of black people from the 40s, from the 50s, from the 1800s. Look at how lean we were then. I'm giving you an assignment. Go and get photos of black people from the 60s. Look at some of the singing groups from the 60s. How many fat people did you see?
Temptation,
the Four Tops, the Shylights, you know, Martha and the Vandals, all of the brothers, James Brown, did not see fat people back in the 60s.
That's right. That's
you
right.
See, why? Because even though the foods that we were eating in the 60s were bad food, but it was still better in its badness than the good food that we eat today. Think about what I just said now. When black soldiers were taken into World War II, they found that black soldiers were big. Almost 100% of the black soldiers, when they were tested, suffered from malnutrition. Now, how can you be big, strong, muscular, but malnourished? Because the foods that we were eating, although they made us big, they made us strong, they made us muscular, you know, we could throw a whole cow over our shoulder and walk down the road with it, but we were malnourished and we were suffering from malnutrition because the quality of the food was poor. It's not good to eat pinto beans, collard greens, mustard greens. It's not good to eat cornbread. It's not good to drink Kool-Aid. It's not good to eat pork chops, pig feet, pig eyelashes, pig ears, pig nose, toes, kick knees, kick ankles, kick arms, kick elbows. You know, yes, it fills you up. And if that's all you have to eat and you need to survive, then do what you have to do. But as soon as you can get something better, you should. Because many of the diseases from which we die today, we could avoid simply by changing our diet. Brother James, so that if you have some more questions or something else you want me to address, you can let me know.
I appreciate that, Brother Victor. And, of course, we want to open up the conversation to our listening and participating audience on the phone as well as online. This is a very, very interesting and necessary subject matter, and we want to get, again, comments from the audience and or questions. And I would encourage all of you who are listening, ask your questions. There's no time like now to get this most vital information. This is about your life and my life. This is about prolonging and sustaining your life in a healthy state. So ask your questions. Make your comments at this time. Sister Aziza, I'm going to open up the floor. If there are any hands up, as we say in the Blog Talk Radio language, or any hands up either on the phone or online.
We have a couple of questions in the chat room, but allow me to remind the listening audience who are calling us by telephone that if you have a question for Brother Victor, please press 1 on your dial pad, and he'll be more than happy to address your question. And I do have a couple of questions in the chat room for you, Brother Victor. We have a question from Brother Glenn who says, is there any known cure for AIDS?
Well, yes. Dr. Muhammad has been using one in Washington, D.C. Since 1991. The product that I was blessed to develop in 1994 is the one that he's been using since that time. And he used my product from 1994 to August 2002. I moved to Florida in 2002, and he started getting a product from Japan, I believe from a laboratory called Hayashibaros in Nagasaki, Japan. But yes, there is a product that can be used, and it's 82% effective in successfully arresting what is known as AIDS. So yes, it is. There is a system.
Yes, sir. Okay. And we have a question from Zan, Z-A-N. I don't know if it's a he or she, but it says, is AIDS being acquired by immunizations, and what about the immunizations that they use to vaccinate our children?
Well, the safest way for me to answer that, I have 7 children, and I have never permitted my children to be vaccinated, and I will never permit my children to be vaccinated nor immunized. The reason I would do that, the reason I do that, is I work for a company in Rockville, Maryland in the 90s where I made vaccines. I work for a company where I made antibodies and antiserums. That was my job. And I know what goes into immunizations and vaccinations. You don't know what's in the syringe when you let them stick that needle in your child. All you see is a clear solution. You don't know what's in it. And you have to remember, these are the same people that gave the Indians smallpox. These are the same people that inoculated you in 1940s with syphilis and didn't tell you. You see? So I can't tell you what to do. Your child belongs to you. But I can tell you what I do. I'm not allowing anybody to vaccinate my children nor give them an immunization. You say, well, you have to do that if they go to school. No, they don't. There is a waiver that you fill out and sign. Because your child is your property. Your child does not belong to the government. That's your child. You make the final decision about it. But now if you are too afraid to stand up for your child and you let them compel you to vaccinate or immunize your child, remember, that's a choice that you made. That's a choice you made because no one can compel you to do anything to your child. So I'll tell you a story that will support what I'm saying. And in 1991, 92, when I was at NIH, my supervisor was a black man from Tuskegee, a veterinarian. And we used to go to the hospital on NIH campus, and we would go to the morgue where a person had died with AIDS. I would take an ice chest with me. I would go into the morgue, and I would cut open the person, and I would remove the cancer, or what are called Kaposi sarcomas, from the cadaver. A cadaver is just a name for a dead person. And I would bring the tumor or the cancer back to the lab. I would put the tumor or the cancer in a Petri dish. I would pour a 0.9% saline solution over the tumor, a syringe, a needle, a syringe, and turn it upside down to the part that is flat. And I would press the tumor and mash it up into small pieces to the point where it would look like it's dissolved. Then I'd get another needle and I'd draw up the solution into the syringe. And one day in 1991 or 1992, I can't remember what year it was, I would inject the tumor, the cancer, into the abdomen of some mice. I put the mice back into the cage 2 days later. And what I would find is that the cancer had taken over the mouse's body. Now, if you've seen pictures of the elephant man, you can go, that's how the mice looked. It had lumps all over them. The tumor had taken over the mouse's head. The tumor was growing out of the mouse's head. The mouse was disfigured. It was growing out of the mouse's abdomen, chest, everything. I would euthanize the mouse. I'd cut the mouse open, and all you could see is tumor, cancer. So one day I had done this. I would cut the tumor out of the mouse, put it back into the saline solution, mash it up, draw it up in a syringe, and I would transfer it to new mice to see how quickly it would grow. One day when I was when I had drawn up the solution into the syringe, you know how you thump the side of the syringe to get the air bubbles out of it so that you don't transfer those inside the animal's body? I was doing that. And as I looked at the syringe to make sure the bubbles were out of it, that's when it dawned on me. I said, this is just a clear solution, but it's loaded with cancer. I said, now, if I were a wicked demon and I wanted to kill people and they don't even know that they've been inoculated with something, what would be the perfect way to do it? You see, so when you go, and I'm not telling you, and I don't want anybody to say Victor Muhammad said that every time you go and get a immunization or a vaccination that it has cancer in it or it has HIV. I didn't say that. But you don't know what's in that syringe when they're sticking it in your baby.
That's right.
All you see is a clear solution. Just like that was what I saw when I held up that syringe to get the air bubbles out of it before I stuck it in that mouse's abdomen. And I knew what was in that syringe. But had I not been the one that mashed up that cancer and drew it up into the syringe, I wouldn't have known, because it was just a clear, cloudy solution. But it was full of cancer. So I hope that answers the Zan's question, Sister Aziza.
Yes, sir, I'm sure it did. If they got over their stomach turning with that description. Wow, that's deep. Okay, we're gonna take a question from the phone. Area code 972. Your mic is live. Well, I'm hoping your mic is live. Area code 972, your mic is live. Okay, I may need to refresh my page.
Yes, ma'am. And while you're doing that, you know, I just want to mention that when my guest, who we are blessed to have as panelists on the show, and myself and Sister Aziza at some points, would share with the audience the wicked machinations of Satan, of some very highly placed white people, some very highly placed Jews. Some of our audience, which is largely mixed with both Muslim and Christian, and of course there are many whites who listen to us or follow us online, you're aghast, I would imagine, at the information and the assertions of facts that we make. But you must understand that the wise of our enemies know who we are and know who they are and know our destiny and know all too well theirs. In the revelations of the Bible, that an angel flew over both water and land on the earth and cried out, "Woe, woe unto those who dwell on earth, for Satan is loose and he is angry because he knows that he has but a short time." In the series, The Time and What Must Be Done, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's centerpiece motivation in all of what he's giving us is, of course, to enlighten us to save our lives, but in so doing, he is exposing Satan at his root. So let me read to you an excerpt of what the minister said in those particularly in installment 37. First of all, I'd like to preface this reading with a statement that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad made to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, saying, and I quote, "Brother, you cannot fathom the depth of Satan. In other words, you cannot calculate how low Satan will go." And so I read. In a May 11, 1987, London Times article entitled "Smallpox Vaccine Triggered AIDS Virus" by Pierce Wright, then the Times science editor, he wrote regarding a 13-year World Health Organization, acronyms WHO or WHO, so-called smallpox vaccine program. The smallpox vaccine theory would account for the position of each of the 7 Central African states, which top the league table of most affected countries, why Brazil became the most afflicted Latin American countries. It has 80 million sons and daughters of Africa in Brazil. And how Haiti became the root for the spread to the U.S. He continues, the greatest spread of HIV infection coincides with the most intense immunization programs, with the number of people immunized being as follows. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, formerly known as Zaire, 36,878,000 people were vaccinated. In Zambia, 19,060,000 people were vaccinated. In Tanzania, 14,972,000. In Uganda, 11,616,000. In Malawi, 8,118,000. In Rwanda, 3,382,000. In Burundi, 3,274,000. But the main one is Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And that is where the most mineral resources are that America needs are found. The smallpox inoculations in Zimbabwe from 1964 to 1973, when it was still called Rhodesia, was 13,410,444 Zimbabweans. Now listen and please follow to make the correlation. The minister continues. Mineral resources of Zimbabwe and the Democratic Republic of the Congo are as follows. Zimbabwe industries are mining coal, gold, platinum, copper, nickel, tin, diamonds, clay, numerous metallic and non-metallic ores, steel, wool, wood products, cement, chemicals, fertilizer, clothing and footwear, foodstuffs, beverages. And in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the industries of mining, copper, cobalt, gold, diamonds, coltan, zinc, tin, tungsten, mineral processing, consumer products such as textiles, plastics, footwear, cigarettes, metal products, processed foods and beverages, timber, cement, commercial ship repair. Could this be why the minister poses the question? There is a constant civil war in the Congo. There is an AIDS pandemic as we speak in the black community, and the black woman, it is said, is the number one carrier of the HIV virus. Oh, dear family, I would encourage and exhort all of us to go and review that installment in particular of The Time and What Must Be Done. That's installment 37. Let me read on. On August 20th, 1998, following a limited meeting of President Bill Clinton and six of his advisors, the world was surprised by a missile attack on a pharmaceutical plant in the Sudan. According to September 1st, 1998, New York Times article by Tim Weiner and James Risen, the purpose of greater secrecy of the small group was to prevent leaks. This attack was somehow combined with an attack in Afghanistan aimed at Osama bin Laden in retaliation for two U.S. embassy bombings in East Africa. They said that Osama bin Laden was then living in the Sudan. I hear chuckling in the background. That was certainly not a pun. The article continued, however, that within days of the attack, some of the Clinton administration's explanations for destroying the factory in Sudan proved inaccurate. Many people inside and outside of the United States government began to ask whether questionable intelligence had prompted the United States to blow up the wrong building, that pharmaceutical building. President Clinton came before the American people and said that in that building they were making weapons of mass destruction, when in fact they were doing the very thing that Brother Gaddafi was doing, making medicines and vaccines to heal the condition of African people. And, of course, that would have interfered with the policy of our government to depopulate these countries. America seeks to destroy anyone who opposes her policies, anyone who stands in the way of such policies that interfere with America's national interests. She plots and she plans to destroy them. Now, I'm going to stop there, but I want to emphasize, underscore, and highlight the intentions of the American government implemented through her wicked foreign policy, which is exposed to us and to all by and through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's illuminating lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done. And so, after reading this, dear brothers and sisters, and all of you are in your listening audience, I encourage you again, question our brother, our knowledgeable and informed brother, whom we are blessed to have as a guest panelist tonight. I'm going to close there, asking Brother Victor if you have any other statements, but I want the audience to get involved. This is an extremely, extremely important subject matter, and ignorance of what is happening will be no acceptable excuse when it ultimately leads to the death of you who and me and those of us who are in the listening audience and in the world. So, Brother Victor, do you have anything else you'd like to say before we re-engage the audience?
No. Let's see if there are any questions from the audience, because I would rather address myths or concerns that the people have rather than telling them something that they might already know.
Very good, dear brother. Queen Aziza, are there any, again, with their hands up in the audience?
Yes, sir. We're going to try to make that call from the Dallas area live. So area code 972, your mic is live.
Assalamu alaikum, ma'am.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, this is Charles Muhammad, and I have a question for you, sir. My question is, and this could be from, you know, in any big city, you know, in this country, but for the women that are prostituting themselves, you know, on the streets, and for the men that frequently interact with those women on the streets, is it a natural way that the body could fight off those the virus if the person didn't know that they were, you know, came in contact with the virus? Because a lot of them do this all day, every day. And sometimes I know they probably run across it. But is it a natural way that the body is fighting this off, trying to fight it off? Because it doesn't seem like it's killing people right off the street. You know, they're doing it for years.
Well, that's a good question, Brother Charles, and that's what I was, that's the point that I was attempting to make a little while ago, that yes. I don't want anybody to go out and start acting crazy by just running around randomly having sex without protection. I'm not telling anybody that, and that's why I want to be careful in what I say. But you have to remember now, this is a virus. This is not something that has come from another planet. This is something that was developed, or it came about right here on this planet. It's a virus. Now, I have always contended, Brother Charles, that there are many people out there right now who have the virus in their body, and they are not infected, nor do they have AIDS, and they probably will never get AIDS, you know. But if you tested them, they would probably show up positive, you know.
Yes, sir.
Because some people just have a comparable enough immune system that they can fight it off. It's just like you having a cold. Every one of us right now on this radio broadcast, every one of us has the rhinovirus in us right now, the virus that causes the cold. Every one of us have the influenza virus in us right now, the one that causes flu. And if you tested us, probably 99% of us have human herpes 6 virus in us, you know, right now, you see.
Right now.
But you might not have a cold, you might not have the flu, you might not be showing any symptoms of herpes. But that's because your body is able to keep it at bay. But now, if you went outside, and it was about 32 degrees outside, and you didn't have something on your head, like a hat, a cap or something, and you walked around for a while, then what happens is that your body is losing heat. Your body has to be at around 37 degrees Celsius at all times. That's about 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Anything below that, then the body has to work too hard to keep itself warm. What happens then, the body gets tired. And once the body gets tired, the immune system doesn't function so well. Then what happens is that the virus or the bacteria begins to duplicate itself. Because when the immune system can't keep it at bay, then it starts to make copies of itself. And then when the copies get to be at a certain number, you say, I am sick. In science, we say that you reach the level of toxicity. But you say, I'm sick. But they mean the same thing. And all that means is that enough copies of the cold virus has been made in your body to the point where, see, most bacteria, most viruses, they give off poison. So when you have diarrhea, you have a bacteria in your gut, in your stomach, and that bacteria starts to give off a poison. And then the walls of your stomach starts to excrete water to try to flush it out. And you call that diarrhea.
Yes, sir.
So that's basically what's going on, Brother Charles. But that's a good question, brother.
Yes. Well, I know that it's a, you know, the minister was speaking on that, the sex drug connection, addiction, you know, and he was speaking on that one. I can't remember the exact word he was talking about, but he was speaking on it one time. And I know that it happens in every major city because if you look on the internet, it's just so much prostitution and everything going on the streets, and you know, black women, you know, not white women, not Mexican women, black girls and stuff, and you see it everywhere on TV and everything, and I'm just knowing that they're running across the disease, but you know, and I know that it's killing them. But, you know, you see them so long and they don't die. You know, they're out there. But then they're saying that the black woman is the number one carrier, but it seems like is there some way that they're fighting it off for a certain amount of time? And then
the medications that have been developed in the last 20 years, Brother Charles, it can keep the virus at bay for a long time. People are living now with AIDS, not HIV, but with AIDS, just as long as everybody else is living, you who don't have it, who doesn't have it, you know. So, that could have something to do with it. And everybody who has the virus does not necessarily contract AIDS.
That's right. Just
like everybody that has the cold virus in them isn't walking around sniffling and sneezing right now. You know, but it doesn't mean that the virus is not in your body.
Okay, sir. Well, thank you. And thank you for your answer.
Thank you for your question, Brother Charles.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Brother Charles.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. We have a question from Beverly. Beverly said, is there a cure? If there is a cure, even at 82%, why is it not being used?
Well, in 1997, some Moroccan Muslims and Jews in New York City who had made millions of dollars in the garment industry, in the clothing business, and they were going to put up money for me to build a laboratory and manufacturing facility to manufacture my product in the U.S. They set up a distribution network that was going to come out of France, and it was going to supply my product to 10 Saharan African countries. A dispute arose over the amount of money that would be paid for the raw material, and the Moroccan gentleman decided that he would scrap it and use the distribution network to send chicken feed down into sub-Saharan Africa. And when I say chicken feed, I mean literal chicken feed. And here's what he called. This guy was a lawyer. He called the Food and Drug Administration to ask them about my product and whether or not they would give approval on my product. Here's what they told him, and I quote, when we are ready to give an approval on an AIDS drug, it will not be given to Victor Muhammad. It will be given to someone who has spent a lot more money than he has, end quote. Now, that person who raised the question, I think you said her name was Sister Bernice or Bernice? Beverly?
Beverly.
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. And here's the thing. That product, everyone knew that the product worked. Because in Washington, D.C., Chicago, New York City, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, there were people who were using the product. And in Washington, D.C., we would have to go out to the car and pick the people up out of the car and carry them into the clinic because they were so frail and skinny from AIDS that they could not walk. The Muhammad would put them on the product, and in 2 weeks, these people were standing and walking and doing well. Now, if everyone or enough people, Sister Beverly, knew that this product existed, why didn't black people get together and put the money together to build our own manufacturing facility? In 1996, while I was meeting with these same Moroccan Jews and Muslims who did more than any black person did, even though they didn't finally put up the money to do it, at least they were willing to meet with me and set it up. And this is what the Moroccan guy said to me. in his office in the garment district in New York City in 1996. He said to me, and I quote, "Victor, if you were white or Jewish, you would already be a millionaire." He said, and I'm continuing the quote, he said, "What you have done with no money, no laboratory, no testing facilities is nothing short of genius." End quote. So I hope that answers Sister Beverly's question, Sister Aziza.
Yes, sir, I'm so sure it did. Thank you.
See,
and we have a question from... Yes, go ahead, sir.
No, ma'am, go ahead, please.
Okay. We have a question from Lee. It says, "Has it been confirmed whether or not you can get HIV from kissing?"
Well, many of the health agencies in this country say that you cannot. But now let me tell you something that I know. This is not something I read. When there is only one cell in the body that does not contain DNA, that are red blood cells. In all my study for all these years, and to the scientific community, those are the only cells in the body that do not contain DNA. Now, what's the significance of containing DNA? Well, HIV replicates itself by attaching itself to the cell, going inside, attaching itself to the chromosome. And, of course, the chromosomes are DNA. So when the cell divides, the nucleus divides. And inside the nucleus are the chromosomes where the DNA is found. So the virus multiplies itself by attaching itself to our DNA. So in essence, any cell that's in the body, I would assume that it contains HIV if the person is infected. Inside the mouth, you have what are called cheek squamous cells. These are the same cells that are used to do a DNA test for a paternity. Or if you just the guy that the quarterback for FSU, he just had to submit some of his DNA because he's been charged with sexual assault. So he had to take a swab. It's called a swab. You get a Q-tip, thing that looks like a Q-tip, and you rub it against the inside of your cheek. In your mouth. Well, if you can take DNA out of your cheek, then isn't it reasonable to believe that those cells are going to be infected too? So those cells break loose from the cheek. So sometimes you can find those cells in saliva. Am I making sense?
Yes, sir. By all means. Yes, sir.
So... if you don't know a person's HIV status, then you probably don't want to be smooching with them.
And if you don't mind, let me add something to that. People who have HIV or AIDS, their immune systems are compromised, and oftentimes they have the condition called gingivitis, which is an infection in the gums, and oftentimes they have bleeding gums. So for those of you who, you know, y'all do y'all thing out there, you know, it's not found in the Nation of Islam. We don't kiss while courting, but for those of you who may kiss, you know, that's one symptom you can look for, you know, during the conversation. Just see if they got bleeding gums. That's one way to just, you know, just to be a little cautious about, you know, who you're kissing. Of course, get that sexual history. I just wanted to put that out there, Brother Victor. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Right.
Thank you, Queen. It makes all the sense in the world. You know, right. As we are approaching, we're into the last half hour of the show, and I want to say at this juncture, Brother Victor, how edified and how grateful we are for the information that you are dispensing, that you're sharing with us. It is really life-giving and life-sustaining information. I would like to talk about prevention in the remaining time that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Prevention. And I'll just stop there and turn the floor over to you.
Well, in reality, the only prevention that is 100% is abstinence.
Yeah.
You better teach.
Now, I would encourage us to do that and travel around Florida, North Florida, the United States, and the world. That's what I say to people. Be abstinent, you know. But I also have to keep my feet firmly planted in reality. What do you mean by that, Victor Muhammad? What I intend by that is this. There is a protein that flows through the veins of all male animals, including humans. And that protein is called testosterone. Now, I'm not Catholic. Therefore, I don't go and ask anybody whether or not they're doing this, that, or the other. If I'm in a setting where I'm working as an HIV counselor, which I do, well, in that setting, I will ask a person. But that's only to get a history, a sexual history of them, to determine their risk factor. But in terms of confession, then no, I don't do that. I don't go investigating people to find out whether or not they're having sex, you know, from a religious perspective. Is what I'm saying. But my advice to you, second to abstinence, is if you're going to be sexually active and you're not married, then use a condom. Because we have to be honest now. People are going to have sex. I know some of us are holy, and I know some of us are righteous, and we don't have sex, even though we're having children.
Yeah, whatever.
You know,
yeah.
But we don't have sex.
Quite,
you know,
paradoxical.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead. Yes, sir.
But those of us who do, use a condom if you're not married. And if you're not sure, I got to be real with you, because my objective is to save your life and stop the spread of HIV.
That's
if you're not sure, even though you are married, of what your mate is doing, use a condom. Or have him use a condom. But there are female condoms out there that you can get. If you don't know it, there are female condoms that you can use. You know.
Now, Brother Victor, I got to stop you right there. I'm sorry. Now, 26 years of marriage counsel, I'm just going to tell you sisters in particularly, because I got a question on the board about that. If you are married, the sisters say, should I use a condom with my spouse if I suspect infidelity? If you suspect infidelity, sugar, you need to put it on lock until you're sure. That's my best advice. That is a crapshoot. That is a death sentence waiting to happen. We have so many sisters, black women in particularly, who have lost their lives because of their husband's infidelity. And if you suspect he is cheating, the first thing that you do is you go out and you get your HIV test. And once you come back with a negative HIV test, second, third time, whatever, you should always remain negative in your status. If you have a man that you can't trust, you need to lock it up. I'm sorry, Brother Victor. I had to put that out there.
Well,
I won't say nothing else.
I mean, one of the things that we have to be careful about is, you know, giving advice on how someone should do something inside their home. That's an area where we have to tread lightly. I kind of stay away from it unless someone asks me. And the thing that I would say is, I would advise that if you're not sure, maybe the best thing to do is use a condom. Because up in the area where I do a lot of my work, up in North Florida, I work with some young women who have master's degrees in social work or master's degrees in health this and health that, and they go out into some of the so-called Hispanic communities, and they give the women the same advice that you just gave, dear sister.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do, I call them in, and I went to the health department because most of them work for the health department. And I said, you know, you all, you might want to step back from that. They said, well, why do you say that, Mr. Muhammad? I said, because those people come from a different culture than you, you know. And what you will go out and tell those women, you could get the hell beat out of them. You see, because they go home and tell their husband what you said, not you, Sister Aziz. I'm talking about, this is what I tell the sisters at the health, the women at the health department. I said, if they go home and do what you said do, then they're going to be coming back to you looking like a raccoon. You see, so we have to be careful, you know, the lines that we cross, because sometimes the truth out of season is more dangerous than an atom bomb and can cause a lot more damage than if the situation were just left alone, you know. So I wouldn't advise anybody to do that. I wouldn't advise anybody not to do it, you know, because...
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, I'll leave it there. But what I would say is, I encourage people, if you are not sure, I encourage people to try to get the person to use a condom, you know. Outside of that, I don't know anything else to advise outside of abstinence. And if you're going to, if you find it difficult or don't want to be abstinent, then the next best thing that I can advise is to use a condom, you know. But one of the things that I encourage people to do is to strive to get married. I know
that
it's difficult. I know that it's difficult. I know that it's hard to be married in America today, you know. But you got to try, because what alternative do you have other than the possibility of death? So that's what I would say.
Thank you, Brother Victor.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You for that measured and balanced advice.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Okay, and we have a question from Born to Be God. That's the name he's using online. And he says, who is immune to the HIV virus and how and why?
I don't know that anyone would be or is immune to a virus. I mean, the fact, if you look at the name of the virus, it lets you know that you're not immune to it, okay. The human immunodeficiency virus. So, see, the way an organism, a microorganism or a pathogen infects your body, it works like a lock and a key. Nothing can get inside of the cell unless it has what is called an antigen on it. Mm-hmm. And the antigen works like a key. And the receptor on the surface of the cell works like the lock. So if any organism approaches the cell and it has the appropriate key, then it can get inside the cell. So the HIV has that key. And all humans, from my study, has the receptor or the lock on the surface of the cell. So the virus is able to get in. Now, if someone has developed immunity to that, I've never heard of it. It doesn't mean that it hasn't happened. See, one thing that you have to learn about science can only respond to what it has studied. That's it. See, and it's wrong to ever think that science knows everything. That's not true. Science means a gathering of information on a particular subject. That's all it means. It doesn't mean that all of that is factual. So don't ever think that just because a scientist or someone says something and it sounds like they know what they're talking about, it doesn't mean that it's true. All you got to do is speak with confidence, put on a white shirt and a necktie and a blue suit, and speak with confidence, and hell, people will believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be the biggest lie ever told.
Mm-hmm.
But if you sound like you know what you're talking about and it sounds impressive, then people will believe you. I got a cliche I'd like to leave you with. The worst kind of foolishness is the kind that can be explained.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, beloved.
Inshallah. Okay,
so,
we have a couple more questions before we run out of time. Carl says that sex is more of a myth today than direct poisoning through food, water, and medication. So I guess he's making a statement there about the source of
about what?
HIV and AIDS, the source in which it comes from. He says sex is more of a myth today than direct poisoning through food, water, and medication.
I don't know what is intended, so I don't know what to say.
I think he's just making a statement, so
okay.
I guess he just wants your feedback on whether or not you agree that HIV is being transmitted not only through sex, but through medication, food, and water.
I wouldn't say food and water because I don't think that's true but it would not be far-fetched to believe that it's being done through some of the therapies or some of the therapies we get under the umbrella or label of medicine or treatments. I wouldn't toss that out the window.
Okay. And then the last question that I have on here from Nari, she says that how much would it cost for us to be able to purchase the cure for AIDS?
Well, that that she should contact the Abundant Life Clinic in Washington, D.C., and talk with Dr. Muhammad about that. Or, yeah, that would be the best thing for that. And he's in, I believe it's Bowie, Maryland. So if you just go online and do a search on Abundant Life Clinic in Bowie, Maryland, B-O-W-I-E, that'll retrieve his phone number, and you can give him. She can give him a call.
Yes, sir. Okay. Well, those are all the questions that I have for now, Brother James.
Yes, ma'am. Once again, thank you, Sister Aziza, and of course, thank you all who are questioning, who posed your questions as well as made your comments. I'd like to read again an excerpt from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's 37th installment of The Time and What Must Be Done, when he offers us some closing advice. He states, "My beloved brothers and sisters and the people of the United States of America and the world, I close with the 113th chapter of the Holy Quran, Al-Falaq, the Dawn. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I seek refuge in the Lord of the Dawn from the mischief of created things and from the evil of intense darkness when it comes and from the evil of those who cast evil suggestions in firm resolutions, and from the evil of the envier when he envies. The enemy is taking natural things," he continues, "created things, and making mischief with it. So by our being affected by this sexual craze, that is how AIDS is spreading so fast. Somebody is introducing AIDS to our girls. And now we are having sex, and some of us are experiencing sex at 5 and 6 years old. What is this world coming to? The answer lies in the food we eat, in the drinks we drink, and in the thoughts we think. Food influences thought, and Jesus says, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. This is why we have to have land. We have to begin farming. We have to take the land that is not being used and seek government permission or even get together in your own communities and buy the vacant lot. Then learn gardening and how to garden, and then get good seeds and start planting food, because it is only when you plant and know what you're planting, and eat what you plant, then your health will improve and your doctor's bills will subside. And when we get into how to eat to live and show you how this is done, we can get away from so much drugs in medical form. Thank you for reading these words. May Allah grant to each of us the light of understanding as I greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum." And I close on this note because in the final words of that excerpt, he exhorts us and reminds us of the need, the essential need to acquire land. Hence, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, as most of you in the audience know, and those of you who don't, I'll be happy to inform you, has reintroduced Muhammad's economic blueprint, ending poverty and want. Again, according to the statistical record, there are 16 million people, black people, that is, that are reported to be in the labor force and reported to get some kind of income. If those 16 million would set aside one nickel, that's 5 cents a day, 35 cents a week, $18 a year. Just those 16 million would amass in the first year $291,200,000 in the first year. And you know, brothers and sisters, and all of you who are listening, we can certainly afford 5 cents a day. So imagine if the 40 or 50 million black people here in America would set aside 5 cents a day. Imagine how much we could amass, and then with what we have amassed financially, imagine how much land we can purchase. You know, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad instructed the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He said, "Brother, I want you to think for the whole." And when he says the whole, he was referencing, of course, not just those who were in the Nation of Islam proper, but those whole of our black people, and even further than that, the whole of humanity. But he stated, if we're going to give people their daily bread, as it is prayed for in the often repeated prayer of our Christian brothers and sisters, how much we, having 40 million people eating one slice of bread three times a day, one slice at each meal, how much land then would we have to put under wheat cultivation to provide people with their daily bread? Then going from the land to the cattle, we have to get into animal husbandry. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan makes the obvious point. If the cow will give up its hide that we can produce leather and then shoes to whites and others, that same cow will give up its hide to black people. If the sheep will give up its wool to other people or of the broader society and other ethnic backgrounds, that same sheep will give up its wool to black people. Let me hasten to say and get to the point. What we see others doing, going to the land and pulling out of the land the rich mineral resources to produce their needs, what we see people doing, raising cattle and producing from that cattle those things that we need to produce clothing for us and other essentials of life. We can do that. And so the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan again is asking all of us to participate in Muhammad's economic blueprint, ending poverty and want. We want you to go right now to www.economicblueprint.org. Your donation to Muhammad's economic blueprint, ending poverty and want. Or send your checks and money orders and make them payable to Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, Muhammad's Economic Blueprint, care of Seaway Bank and Trust Company, attention Sherilyn Russell, that's R-U-S-S-E-L-L, P.O. Box 19522, Chicago, Illinois, 60619. Let us stop being beggars of others for the crumbs that fall from their tables. Let us stop standing on the sidelines, being an inferior people impacting on society because we wish to attach ourselves to others who have gone out and done what all civilized people do, what all independent people do, that is to acquire land, go to the land and extract from the land that which we need to sustain our lives. Our dear brother Victor Muhammad, I want to thank you so much on behalf of Nation Building Network, on behalf of this show, Put On the New Man, and on behalf of our listening and participating audience, I want to thank you, brother, for taking time out of your busy schedule and honoring us with your presence tonight and sharing with us this invaluable information regarding HIV, AIDS, and also the information you shared with us about prevention and, of course, going to the land and producing something for ourselves. Thank you, Brother Victor. Now, leave these last couple of minutes for you to make some closing remarks, if such you desire.
Well, thank you. The only thing that I can say to us, for everyone on the hookup, on the radio show, is it doesn't matter what it is that call ourselves. If you are on the planet today, it means that you're going through something and that you're experiencing something and that you're most likely having some form of difficulty. It might not be financial. It might be something, a matter of the heart. But everybody is going through something today. And the only thing I can say to you is this. Be patient. Be patient. Be patient. Because whether we remember it at all times or not, there is an irrefutable fact that is taking place. And that fact is that no matter what is going on, God is in control of it. I know how it appears in America. I know how it appears that America can do anything that she wants to do. It appears that Britain can do anything that she wants to do. But I'm going to tell you something, brothers and sisters. That's just the way it appears. That is not reality. Yeah. God is in control of this thing. And if you don't believe it, I'll leave you with a challenge. And be sincere in your prayer. And ask God for his help with no matter what you're going through. I don't care what it is. If you are sincere in your prayer and you ask God for help, see if America has more power than God.
Come on, brother.
That's what I'd like to leave you with. Thank you all for listening to me. And I pray to God that I said something to you from which you can get some benefit. And if I did, and one person has been moved by something God blessed me to say, then I feel that I was successful. Thank you all.
Thank you again, Brother Victor. And also, please let us know how we can reach you, get in touch with you, an email address.
Okay, yes,
your
no
office
problem.
Number, however we can reach you for more information.
My office number in Tallahassee is 850-765-2979. Our website is www.lsow.org. That stands for Life Sciences of Washington, but it's lsow.org. We have a Facebook page. We're on Twitter. We have a Pinterest account, and we have a, what's the other thing, with the pictures?
Instagram.
But anyway, Instagram, exactly.
Instagram.
Lord Jesus, help me. Somebody pray for me. But those are the ways you can reach me. And my email address is Victor, V-I-C-T-E-R, dot Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, at gmail.com.
Thank you. Thank
yes,
you so much.
And Brother Victor, we have a rule here on Nation Building. I know this is your first time, so, you know, you can come on here one time, but you can't just come on here one time. So you got to come back.
Sister, I have never turned down anyone in 25 years of beaking. I've never turned down anyone. Never. Never. You know,
yes,
so
sir. I'll praise the truth to Allah.
That's right.
I am just an email, phone call, or a rock throw away.
Yes, sir. And thank you, Brother Victor, for coming on tonight.
I wanna thank you publicly for getting me through the last requirements of our certification to become HIV AIDS counselor and tester. Thank you so much, dear brother.
You are welcome,
may
brother.
May continue to bless you.
You are welcome. And remember, when the God gave Adam control of the earth, he had to equip Adam to control the earth. And
that's
he did
right.
that by giving him credentials. I mean, if you read Genesis, God gave Adam credentials, the things that he needed in order to be able to run the planet. Well, when you read Genesis 15:13, God is going to give somebody else rulership over the planet.
That's right.
And we're
That's
going
right.
to need those same credentials in order to run the planet.
That's right.
So black people got to go out now, be certified as nurses, doctors, airplane pilots, you know, and everything else. Now, I ain't going to the moon. And I'm not going to another planet. Now, if somebody else want to go, y'all go ahead. But I'm not going up there bothering with them brothers. They ain't came
right.
down here. I'm not going up there.
Yes, sir.
You understand?
Absolutely,
yes,
dear brother.
I never
Thank
understood
you.
The space, the whole space thing. I never understood it, and I don't really want to because I'm not going. That's just too far to be going. You know, the spaceship get a flat tire out there in space, and what you going to do? What you going to put the jack on to jack it up to change the tire?
You got to call AAA.
I'm serious.
Well, I don't want to use the word deteriorate, but as we digress into humor, as we close out the show, you know, some of the statements in the serious nature of which is a whole nother show at another time, but the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as you well know, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan have given us insight into the motivation of those who are participating helter-skelter in this space race, as they call it. Or race to space. But that's for another show at another time. Sister Azizia,
okay.
if you
and
would, could you give us the lineup?
Yes, sir. And we have such a busy weekend. We started it off with you, Brother James, of study group tonight, put on the new man, which was excellent. On tomorrow, at a special time, we're not doing Young, Gifted, and Black at 5 p.m. Central instead of 8. At 5 p.m. Central, we are doing a special presentation, a listening party for our Nation of Islam own hip-hop artist, godfather of Young, Gifted, and Black, Problem 13. So join us tomorrow at 5 p.m. for Who is Problem 13, the man, the music, and the mission. And we will have all his music on, so join us for a rare interview as well as a listening party. And then tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Central, we're going to be on the live hookup with Let Us Make Man. Yours truly, of course, will be there speaking on how to choose a mate. So we'll be on that broadcast from 8 until 10 p.m. And look on Facebook under events. Those of you who listen to me on Thursday night, all of the information is there for you to call in, as well as the PIN code. So that's 5 to 7 tomorrow for Problem 13 and 8 to 10 tomorrow night for Let Us Make Man. And, of course, on Sunday, our beloved Brother Vernon will be back here at 6:30 p.m. Central. He's going to talk more about the economic blueprint and how to make your donations to the economic blueprint, ending poverty and want. And, of course, on Monday at 8 p.m. Central, Brother Kareem will be back with Conscious Black Nations. And on Tuesday, Brother Jihad is live from Albuquerque, New Mexico. He is down there with our indigenous Native Americans. They are going to be on our airways. I am so excited. There's so many different tribes, but I know the Navajo tribe in particular will be on with him Tuesday at 8 p.m. Central, so you don't want to miss that. On Wednesday, join DJ Black Caesar and friends at 7 p.m. Central. And, of course, on Thursday, join me at 8 p.m. Central, and I'll be back with the East Coast brothers from New York. They want to talk about the extreme value of the MGT. Don't want to miss that, for sure. So, and on Friday, we'll be right back here with Student Minister James. We'll put on the new man. And that's our lineup for the week, Brother James. You want to say anything before we go?
Just a word of gratitude for you, to you, dear sister, and for and to our listening audience. I want to thank you, dear Queen Aziza, for extending to me this wonderful forum and format that we can get the message of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan out to the people. We are growing. I know I haven't got the numbers recently, but we're still sustaining the numbers in the thousands in the audience, dear sister.
Yeah, more than.
Oh, yes,
more
ma'am.
Than.
All
yes,
praise
sir.
Is due to Allah. Excellent.
Yes,
I want to thank you. Thank you so much for extending this to us and to our listening audience, our immeasurably valuable listening audience. I thank Allah to you, for you, and we want to encourage you to continue to tune in whenever these airways, whenever we are blessed to grace these airways. We want you to tune in, tell people about it, increase in the listening shift, the participation. Let's get the truth out to the people. Thank you again.
Yes.
And thank you again, Brother Victor. And may Allah bless you all. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Brother James. And don't forget, people, that, you know, I do accept and I do do your request for topics. So if you have a topic, hit me up on Facebook. You know, if it makes sense to me, I'll do it as long as you're willing to come on. So I just want to encourage our audience to let us know what's on their minds as well. We want to thank Brother Victor Muhammad and, of course, to you, Brother James. I know you're always thanking me for allowing you this format. But I tell you, this platform is for all of us, especially those who are followers of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. It is our duty to teach these teachings. But, Brother, without you, without the level of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, and the tenure of service that you have given, then put on the new man would not be what it is. So, Brother, not only do we thank you for what you provide to us every week on the air, but we thank you for your service in our nation. I can't count, and I know you can't either, how many people have stood up under Student Minister James Muhammad. But, Brother, we thank Allah for you. Thank you for your service and your work. And, of course, thanks, Sister Joanne, for me, for allowing you so much time on the air.
She is my quiet strength, no question, and the wind. beneath my wings. There's no question about that, and I'll pass that on to her.
Yes, yes. Thank her for giving you permission.
All right. Don't get carried away. All right. I'm not even going to digress into that.
Okay. May Allah bless us all with the light of understanding. We need you as we came before you, and our nation greeted words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Assalamu alaikum.